Eventually, you continued on with your studies and you became an important resource, I think, in terms of Asian studies, came to Madison. And at one point, I think you served as kind of a conduit on a gentle, quiet level between the U.S. And countries in Asia. How did that come about? And what was that work about?
It was a surprise. It so often happens in life. I was at that point, this was in December of 65. I had just become chair of the department. It was December. I had a call from the American Friends Service Committee, which is the Quaker service organization in Philadelphia, saying that they were looking for an American Quaker to go with two British Quakers to India and Pakistan. India and Pakistan had had a very ugly brief war in the summer of 65. There was a ceasefire, but not a peace. There were prisoners of war on both sides. There were civilians who'd been caught on both sides of the border. The Quakers had a long history in India. Horace Alexander, who was an important Quaker, had worked very closely with Gandhi. In fact, as an English citizen, he carried messages from Gandhi to the viceroy and backwards. So the London Quakers thought maybe with this country that now is two countries, there might be some background of Quaker activities that could be helpful. We have friends in Pakistan. We have friends in India. We have this long tradition of working with Gandhi. So maybe we could do something. They had two British Quakers who both had experience in that part of the world, but they were looking for an American Quaker, so it wouldn't just be a British project. And there weren't that many American Quakers who knew very much about India. Anyway, I got the call saying, could I free myself for 3 or 4 weeks to go with these British Quakers to India and Pakistan, essentially on a fact-finding mission, just what's happened and is there any way in which Quaker friends of both India and Pakistan could do something useful? Well, we were just hitting the bad time of the year for chairs, budgets, and personnel, and new courses, and all the kind of stuff that goes with campus activities. So I said, gee, I'm sorry, there's no way I can get it away in the next month or so. It's just way too busy. And I hung up, and I turned to my secretary and said, you know, I had a very interesting offer to do something which could be quite intriguing. And she said, what was it? And I said, well, a chance to go with these two British Quakers to India and Pakistan on a fact-finding mission. But I can't do it. We have all this stuff we have to do. And she, without realizing it, said, who needs you? Which was terrific, she said. You know, we have two or three other people who can fill in as chairs. They've had experience. They know exactly. If this is something that seems useful, why didn't you call them back? Well, within about 2 minutes, I called back and said, could I reconsider the offer? And they said yes. And I said, well, I'm willing to go. Let's see if we can put it together. So within a week or two, I was in Washington with the Quakers talking with the ambassador from India and the ambassador from Pakistan about this project. And then during my winter break, I flew to England and met the two other British Quakers, both much wiser and much more seasoned than I was. And then the three of us flew to Pakistan and began essentially a month of moving back and forth between India and Pakistan on a fact-finding mission. Well, very quickly it turned out that the fact that we were going back and forth was something that leaders on both sides of the border were quite excited about, because once countries are having bad relations with each other, the first thing they do is to close their embassies. And so they can't talk with each other. In this case, they close their high commissions because they're members of the Commonwealth. They don't have ambassadors. They have high commissioners. And so they had not been able to talk directly with representatives of the other country since that summer. And all they had been able to hear was vitriol from the other side's radio and insults. And they knew they were prisoners of war that weren't being, were being perhaps harmed, and there were refugees and civilians and all the rest. So very quickly, we found ourselves being moved up to quite high ranks of people saying, when you get to the other side, could you say this or that or the other? Because there was nobody else doing it. Just before we flew out there, the Soviet Union actually had brought the leaders of India and Pakistan together at Tashkent, and they had signed a ceasefire agreement to restore normalcy. And then the Indian Prime Minister, Lal Bahadur Shastri, had a heart attack and died in Tashkent. So here was this moment when peace was to be restored. The Prime Minister of India had died. the president of Pakistan had signed a treaty he said he wasn't going to sign, so he was going to go back to Pakistan and be given a very hard time because each side agreed to give up the territory they'd conquered in the war, and each side had promised they weren't going to. So at this point, the fact that there were three Quakers who were willing to go back and forth on both sides represented an opportunity. So we did end up meeting the new prime minister in India, who was Indira Gandhi, and Indira Gandhi remembered the Quaker Horace Alexander, and we had a couple of very pleasant talks with her, and then she asked us to speak to President Ayub Khan on the Pakistan side. So we found ourselves carrying messages between the leaders of two sides, which were confidential, and were basically well-intentioned. Each side was stuck with a public position of hard line and so on, but each side said, you know, we are more reasonable than we can appear to be because we have to appear to be tough, whereas we do realize that there are ways that we have to negotiate our way through this. So that was the first time I became involved in these kinds of behind-the-scenes quiet message carrying. And once into that, then there were several other occasions when the British Quakers, who had funding for this kind of thing, needed an American Quaker. So I ended up doing similar projects in Sri Lanka and Korea and Vietnam and so on.